greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
Atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful Southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
An intruder attacks a Portland man with a screwdriver. Hundreds gather at the Hawthorne Bridge as a symbolic gesture against hate crimes. And motorcycle enthusiasts fail to invite Sarah Palin to this year's Veterans Bike Run.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed! For this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon. I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, May 30th, 2011, Memorial Day. A man who returned home Sunday afternoon was attacked upon finding an intruder in his house. When confronted, police say the suspect attacked the victim with a screwdriver. Portland police say the attack happened about 1:30 p.m. on Sunday. The man told investigators he and a friend arrived home in the 10,000 block of Southeast Division Street and found the stranger in the house. The victim told the police the intruder was trying to pry open a locked dresser drawer. He said the intruder then pushed him backward and hit him in the head with a screwdriver. As the friend was calling 911, the suspect ran out of the house. The man is described as white, 5 feet 8 inches tall and clean-shaven. He wore wraparound sunglasses and a flannel shirt. The homeowner was treated at a local hospital for non-life-threatening injuries.
White people are really the cause of everything bad.
Yeah, and in Southeast Portland, finding a white guy with wraparound sunglasses and a flannel shirt, that's a needle in a haystack, baby.
I myself have had it with Whitey. It's time for a cleansing.
Down with the man.
That's right.
I say.
Something's got to be done.
We'll hold on to that because... Damn it! I lost it.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Monday, May 30th, 2011, Memorial Day. And greetings and salutations and hi-de-ho to you. Coming up later on this hour, entertainment news, also Science of the March. Don't forget, if you want to get this program via iTunes, you can do that later on the day, or as a direct MP3 download here, or at legionofnews.com. Also, coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com, the Rick Emerson radio program will fill your brain with tasty knowledge and weevils. That's it, Rick Emerson Show.
What, weevils?
Yes.
People don't want that.
Shh. I just slipped it by. Don't bring it to their attention. Now, see, now you pointed it out. Now nobody wants it. Damn you, Don. You ruin everything.
I think we should just get rid of the weevils before we send out the show.
This is because you're white. Jesus.
Am I keeping you down?
Seriously, white people can't let you do anything. Let's see. So coming up today in the Rick Emerson radio program, we'll have a recap of last night's episode of The Killing. Also, Mr. Aaron Duran from geekinthecity.com will stop by with The Week in Geek. That's all coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
An event organized to support two gay men who were recently targeted in a violent attack attracted hundreds, if not thousands, of participants along Portland's Hawthorne Bridge. Hands Across the Hawthorne featured people from across the community. Organizers said participants were asked to join Hands Across the Bridge as a symbolic gesture against hate crimes and violence in the city. Portland Mayor Stan Adams said, "I couldn't be prouder to be mayor of a city that turns out like this to say no to intolerance. It's really inspiring." Portland police said the men who were beaten last Sunday on the East Bank Plaza Esplanade were believed to have been beaten because the... I'm all over the place here. Hold on. The two men were beaten last Sunday on the East Bank Esplanade. It's believed to have happened because the suspects saw the victims holding hands.
Now we need to have some sort of an inspirational rap song.
Yeah. Should it be about the people being beaten, or should it be about the Hawthorne Bridge and the...
No, I think it should be anti-beating. I think it should be a...
Well, I know that, but it's... I'm just wondering, so should it just be purely uplifting? We're holding hands.
Well, I'm saying we've already done...
Across the Hawthorne.
If we're bringing Hands Across America back, then clearly we need to bring back We're All in the Same Gang, as made famous in 1987. I'm just saying, if we're going to be reaching this far back for inspiration, then clearly, you know, clearly the next thing is, I mean, I guess Ronnie James Dio's not really around to do it, but clearly some sort of a hearing aid follow-up, you know, can't be far behind. Excellent.
Well, it was organized by groups such as Basic Rights Oregon, Cascade AIDS Project,
you know,
Pride Northwest, and the Q Center.
I'm all for, you know, and here's the thing. I don't mean the, you know, I'm all for the show of solidarity and what, but how about like a "you beat us and we'll beat you back" rally? How about like, the next time you beat us, we're going to break your spine, jackass? I mean, that really is what's necessary. You know, I'm all for a show of, you know, support for the gay community and all that. I don't mean that in a sarcastic way. I really am all for it. But how about it, like, the next time you try to beat up somebody, we're going to pound you into a paste, dick.
You're thinking just a little less love and a little more fisticuffs.
I'm just thinking that rednecks get what rednecks get, and jackasses get what jackasses get, and I think that point needs to be brought into stark relief. You know what I mean? So, I mean, you know, like, you know...
I don't know how you really do that with a rally, though, without it erupting in flames and beatings.
I don't know. I mean, we could have come sort of some sort of a chant, or maybe a maybe we could have done a pantomime, or like a some sort of a like a we could have acted it out like a Punch and Judy show,
like
writ large,
like a comedia.
Yes, exactly. Or we could have, you know, a sort of Greek chorus to let the word go forth to the people.
Well, maybe that's phase two. Phase one is a show of support, show of hands. Everybody holds hands across the Hawthorne. Next is this phase where we tell everyone that those hands must become fists.
I mean, I don't mean to be snarky. The show of peaceful support is great and it's wonderful and whatever, but really that never stops anything. You know what stops people is when jackasses get what jackasses get coming to them. That's all. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
So Rick Emerson wholeheartedly endorses that if somebody, you know, somebody comes in, you know, and makes like they're going to give you a bunch of fives, you just, you know. Just...
Maybe you could be the local media spokesman for that phase of the public education, the jackasses get what jackasses get program. That could be TM. That could be.
Well, I've been wanting to do the, you know, because CBS wouldn't let us do the thing of giving a fruit basket to guys who shot intruders. And, you know, and but I've been waiting to do it here, but it's like there's been a paucity of those.
Yeah.
It's like the universe is punishing me. Ever since we came over here to do this show, there haven't been... I mean, I guess that's a good problem for me to have. There haven't been a lot of people just, you know, getting paid back in lead for going and screwing with a guy in his house. But because that was the whole thing we were going to do. We were going to go and... It was sort of like presenting a cardboard check, but edible and shaped like fruit. So, you know, that's fine. Okay. Yeah, who knows? Maybe it won't be necessary. Maybe the hands over the Hawthorne thing will be, maybe that will be sufficient, and everybody
all of the jackasses will go, oh,
yeah, I mean,
oh, we like gay people now.
Bigoted pinheads will see the error of their ways. I'm just saying, if they don't, then sometimes that point needs to be made elsewise.
With Mr. Louisville Slugger.
That's right, Don.
All right.
And a pair of pliers.
President Obama led Memorial Day services today at Arlington National Cemetery in Virginia. He told the crowd that Americans owe a debt to our fallen heroes we can never fully repay.
To those of you who mourn the loss of a loved one today, my heart goes out to you. I love my daughters more than anything in the world, and I cannot imagine losing them. I can't imagine losing a sister, brother, or parent at war.
The president says he can only imagine what it's like to lose a loved one in the war.
The grief so many of you carry in your hearts is a grief I cannot fully know. And this day is about you and the fallen heroes that you loved.
Now, what is the difference between this and Veterans Day? I know I ask this every year, but I never remember.
I have no idea. One of them used to be Armistice Day, and I think that's
Veterans
Day.
That's Veterans Day.
So, and then Memorial Day is for, I think Veterans Day is for everyone who served in a war ever, and Memorial Day is for people who died in war.
Okay. No, that makes sense. No, I guess I could. So one is a sort of subset of the other.
Yes.
Okay. And there is no more Armistice Day.
No.
That's gone. Right. Is President's Day something
Probably
else now,
because
too?
Because we're stupid Americans and we don't know what the word armistice means.
Have we gotten rid of President's Day? Has that been merged with something else?
No, President's Day is the merging. It was we took Lincoln's birthday and Washington's birthday and we jammed them together into one and became President's Day.
All right. And MLK Day is still MLK Day. That's not like Civil
sure.
Rights Day or something.
Yeah, but that's only barely considered an actual holiday.
I thought they were going to be... I suppose if it's 1990 and you're in Arizona.
Well, I mean, not all businesses, you know, observe it.
Yeah, but isn't that the thing though? Didn't they modify it to where now it's Civil Rights Day in some places?
Oh, did they?
Well, I don't know. That's what I thought. Armistice Day is Veterans Day. Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So now there was some talk about making it Civil Rights Day, and then because that was that guy that Edwin Meekham Dick in Arizona that refused to acknowledge Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and so they were going to do this sort of end run around that by just calling it something else, and then I don't know if that ever happened or not. President's Day was Washington. Okay, so yeah, they've merged the two, and then MLK Day I think is still MLK Day almost everywhere.
Right.
All right. Awesome.
Oh.
All right.
Sarah Palin's One Nation bus tour is apparently kicking off with something of a backfire. I hate people who write these things. Responding to what he said was a press release announcing Sarah Palin would visit the annual Rolling Thunder Veterans Bike Run in Washington, D.C. as part of her bus tour. A spokesman for the group says she was actually never invited. This is not a political event. Maybe she's coming because she knows we have 500,000 people in town, said Ted Schpack, legislative director for Rolling Thunder. The way it came out, she's saying we endorsed her. We're not endorsing anybody, and she's not speaking on our stage during our program. A brief statement posted Thursday on sarahpack.com promised to appreciate the significance of our nation's historic sites, patriotic events, and diverse cultures on the tour, which many predict may be the beginning of a presidential run. The tour, which begins this weekend in Washington, will wind its way north. The annual Memorial Day Rolling Thunder ride from the Pentagon into Washington aims to raise awareness for veterans issues, like the plight of prisoners of war left behind in countries of conflict. This year's guest speakers include Defense Secretary Robert Gates and Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Admiral Mike Mullen. The flap was apparently created in part by former Rolling Thunder board member Mike DiPaolo, who said he invited Sarah Palin to participate and got a call from her campaign on Wednesday asking to take him up on the offer. A spokesperson for Rolling Thunder said celebrity guests are often invited to take part, but Schpack said her participation was a distraction from the spirit of the event, and when asked if the former governor's bus would be participating in the ride on Sunday, he said, absolutely not.
And what is Rolling Thunder again?
It's a huge bike rally where motorcycle guys ride from the Pentagon to Washington,
right,
D.C. to basically raise awareness for veterans' rights.
Okay.
Three young girls were trapped in a carnival ride in Massachusetts on Sunday afternoon. An afternoon of fun turned into an afternoon of fright for the girls at Trinity Episcopal Church Carnival on Route 138. The three girls were trapped about 50 feet in the air on the Rollaplane ride.
Fantastic.
The attraction usually spins and rotates, but it stopped while the girls were in it. Canton Fire Department Lieutenant Chris Sanford said, there's two chains. One of them came off the sprocket and bound up. The ride was frozen at a 45-degree angle. The girls were trapped for more than 30 minutes while festival-goers helplessly watched.
Giving them only a view of their own demise.
And their underpants.
That's great.
They appeared to be calm. I was impressed, said man in the street David Ford. Firefighters were called to the scene. They attached ropes and rotated the ride, allowing the three girls to climb out onto the grass. They complained about the heat, were given water, and checked out by EMTs. One of the girls was injured. Lieutenant Sanford said, one little girl was on the bottom with the other two pressing on her, so I think her legs probably fell asleep.
Wait a minute. They were 50 feet above the ground, but they climbed out?
Well, no. The firefighters attached ropes to it.
Oh, and then pulled the thing closer to the ground.
Down.
Okay,
they
didn't have to, like,
manually.
They didn't have to, like, rappel,
no.
Like, cliffhanger style.
No.
Okay.
So now the carnival's continuing, but they've taken the Rollaplane out of service while an investigation.
Because Lord knows that couldn't be emblematic of a larger problem. That couldn't be a symptom of perhaps some greater ill that is plaguing the carnival.
God knows there's nothing shady or sketchy about those traveling carnival rides.
Lowest bid, huh? Great.
A single court case in California could have repercussions for freedom of speech around the world. Twitter has been ordered to reveal a user's identity after a series of tweets about a person in the UK. Attorney Nick Armstrong says this type of lawsuit involving internet usage is new.
Twitter
won.
The law of privacy is, what, now 11 years old. The internet is a bit older.
Is I love his voice.
Idris Elba as Luther coming
him.
Onto the...
The law of privacy is, what, now 11 years old. The internet is a bit older, but social media are 3 or 4 years old. So they're not even adolescent troubles. These are almost like birth pangs and childhood agonies rather than anything else.
Okay, that's completely the Luther accent that Idris Elba puts on.
I'm all a flutter.
All right, awesome.
Armstrong explains the 1998 Human Rights Act. Oh, please, explain the 1998 Human Rights Act to me, Nick.
The whole area of law in this country is quite new because the whole law of privacy and non-intrusion into family and private life here was only, really, is only 10 or so years old.
That's fantastic.
I am so in love with him right now.
But that's only because you're picturing a huge black man. If he was just some pasty, you know, schlubby little mushroom of a guy, you wouldn't.
That's true. I'm imagining Idris Elba.
A big, hot, crazy black cop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or a sex cop, as we like to call them.
Is that what we call them?
Yes. That is a great. Well, this is really the problem with the British, though, is that if you have something that's international, then it's like the British have that whole thing where it's like real easy to sue somebody for slander, you know, and libel and everything. So, which is why they don't get any of the good South Parks over there.
They're a very polite people.
Seriously, just screwing everything up for everybody.
Police are looking for a man who led a state trooper on a chase before crashing into a parked car on Southeast 77th Avenue and Clay this morning. The incident happened about 4 a.m. State police say the chase lasted just about a minute and started at Southeast 80th Avenue and Salmon Street. That's like five blocks.
It went from where to where?
It went from 77th and Clay to 80th and Salmon.
How would you even...
That's like five blocks.
I don't even know that you'd have time to accelerate properly.
How is that a chase?
No, that's just dumb.
Senior Trooper Jason Bledsoe spotted the driver of a blue Dodge Caravan driving erratically. Trooper Bledsoe said he thought the driver might have been driving drunk and says he flashed his lights and used his siren. However, Bledsoe said the driver sped off until he crashed a few blocks later into a Subaru parked in a driveway.
Fantastic. That's wonderful.
The suspect then fled.
Did I tell you about this, the thing that happened a couple weeks ago where the guy ran into a building down the street from my house?
No.
Yeah, it was like 2 in the morning. So it was when, so Lara was on her way from, she was driving from here to Idaho to Provo, I guess. Anyway, so but she and I were like doing it. I don't know, we were texting or something gay. We were texting back and forth. And she was like in Pocatello at like some terrible like flea trap motel by the side of the road. Anyway, so we were texting. And then I suddenly told her, I'm like, BRB, huge noise, whatever. And I walked, and a guy just like 50 yards from my front door had just driven his truck into a building. Driven it into a building. And then the best part is, and so I'm like, OMG, guy hit, you know, which is totally when you can use that. And the guy has driven truck into, it's awesome. And I was trying to take a photo of it, but then it was obscured by all my other neighbors getting out to look at it. And there were two guys who immediately jumped out of the truck. I can't believe I'm going to talk about this. And this is the problem of putting things on Twitter. Then I think I've just said them. I forget to actually talk to them. Two guys jumped out of the truck, and they were trying to, I swear to God, trying to pull the truck, like, out of the building with their bare hands so they could speed off, which isn't really going to work.
Yeah, if putting it into reverse isn't helping.
No, they're like, quick, pull! And it's like this huge truck that's into a building. And so then the cops showed up, and, you know, I'm, like, live-tweeting, you know, all of this. I'm like, OMG, guy driven into a building across the street. And so then the cops show up, and the best part, this is why I love living in Southeast Portland, the very, very best moment of the entire night was the guy who has just driven his truck into a building saying, I didn't do anything, as the cop is like sitting him down on the curb. It was awesome. It was fantastic. It was just so wonderful. I wish that I'd been filming that. It was great.
TriMet announced that Line 19 buses will be rerouted from Willamette National Cemetery today due to expected heavy Memorial Day traffic congestion. The agency also wanted to remind passengers that all MAX and bus lines today will be running on the Sunday schedule. Line 19 Woodstock-Gleason buses will travel in a one-way loop east on Southeast Duke Street, south on Southeast 92nd, west on Southeast Flavelle, north on Southeast 82nd. I hope you're taking notes about this. And back to west on Southeast Duke from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. And there will be no bus service on the route east of Southeast 92nd Avenue.
What?
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Apparently, a lot of people go to Willamette National Cemetery on Memorial Day because of, you know, dead soldier people.
There's Flavelle, it's by a, what cemetery is there? Oh, that's the one. Is there? It's that cemetery that's off. It is like on 82nd or something, right?
Yeah.
Okay, like if you're headed the whatever direction it is.
Yeah.
From my house to Best Buy.
Yes.
On 82nd, and there's that cemetery there.
That which is, I'm sure, how everyone remembers where it is.
Here's the other thing that
it's the one between Rick's house and Best Buy.
We also had to have, you know, in addition to, you know, something honoring veterans and then something honoring those who died in combat. We also had to have something where we just go by and just deface the headstones of our enemies. You know, of those we vanquished, where we just go by and just take a good long whiz, you know, right there. You know, just, you know, hello Nazi, and then just a good long stream of urine right there on the headstone.
I used to think that because I used to drive home from work when I lived in West Lynn. I used to drive past this, I don't know what it is, if it's a synagogue or a Jewish community center of some sort or whatever, and they would have these regular things, like once a year, this annual deal where they would invite anybody who wanted to come and sit, you know, in remembrance of those that you loved, who you've lost. And I would always think, seriously, why don't we also have a day where we can just, like, rage at people we hate?
I would just, but not even that, but see, I wouldn't even
like
want it to
would
be
get
that.
Us out of, and then you could, like, you know.
I'd have, like, a dancing on Hitler's grave day.
Well, I'm totally in favor of that, but I mean also just even people in your own personal life. If they're just people like, man, Aunt Sally was a bitch.
My dad didn't buy me a pony.
Yeah, and you can go and you can just leave, like, a dead flowers on their grave or something and do a little dance. And it's okay. Just that one day, it's allowed.
Well, you could do that today, Don. What's stopping you, really?
Other than
the crowds.
And, yeah, that's the thing, is that
people
consider it to be in poor taste. We need, like, some kind of an official thing, I think, that
someone says, a day of raging against people we hate, or as the internet calls them, weekdays. Yes, thank you.
Well, yes, there is that.
But I mean, like, don't you think we should just have like a national national Hitler can get effed?
Yeah.
Day, you know? And so like there's that great story about Groucho Marx being in Germany, and actually there was the you could at this time you could drive up. This was, I guess, maybe in the 60s. You were able to drive to the bunker where Hitler and, like, you know, and Eva Braun and Goering or whoever was it, where, you know, where the bunker where Hitler, like, you know, offed himself like a coward. And so you were able to go and, like, drive up right to it because they hadn't started to block that stuff off and preserve it or demolish it or anything. And so they tell this great story about Groucho Marx actually making them drive like 90 minutes out of their way just so he could go and dance on the place where Hitler died. And then it was awesome. They said he, like, clambered out of the car, and he just, you know, climbed all the way up to the top, and he's like, hold on a second, I'll just be a minute. And then he just, like, did this dance. He, like, did this full-on, like a Lindy Hop on top of the place where Hitler died, and he's like, all right, we can go. And they got back in the car, and then they left, which is awesome. That's the sort of celebration that Rick Emerson endorses.
Well, Phoenix police arrested a man they believe shot at a grounded plane parked at Deer Valley Airport early Sunday outside of Phoenix. Police say Randon Reed, 26, was likely drunk when he fled the airport around 1:30 a.m. after officers heard gunfire in the area while on patrol. This was from Phoenix police spokesman Steve Martos. And Mr. Emerson, you will find a
mugshot. Oh, that's already posted.
Yes, of this fellow.
You can go to rickemerson.com/pictures and go to visual aids for May 30th to see a picture of Mr. Reed.
The officers observed a vehicle speed away from the area, Marto stated. Officers obtained a license plate and attempted a traffic stop. However, Reed continued to flee at a high rate of speed. The officers arrested him at home and located two weapons believed to have been used during the shooting. At the airport, police recovered shell casings at the scene and discovered that an airplane was damaged by gunfire. Reed refused to speak with officers and was arrested on suspicion of aggravated DUI, felony flight, and two outstanding warrants. Investigators were working to contact the owner of the plane. So to go back to the story, guy was drunk, went to the airport, was just shooting at a parked plane.
He looks full-on crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, not a little bit crazy. He looks completely crazy. I mean, in a different way, and he's got a pointy head. Have you noticed that? Lisa, his head comes to an actual point. I mean, and his head is shaved, so it's not like it's the hair. That's weird. I've never really seen a guy like this before. His head is actually, he's got a pinhead. I mean,
yeah,
almost literally.
And he's making a face kind of like, I remember Flea making pictures like that back in the day.
He does look a lot like that.
He has that Flea thing going on.
Like when you step out onto the porch and it's very cold and you kind of go, ooh, and you kind of pull your lips back. That's what he looks like. Excellent. That's wonderful. All right.
Let's do our science news.
Oh, by the way, that's Multnomah Cemetery in 82nd. Apparently, Willamette National is somewhere else, south of Johnson, south of Johnson Creek.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Let's see. What are we doing?
Science.
All right. Excellent. Here's your science on the march for Monday, May 30th, 2011. That is Memorial Day, brought to you by Squires Electric. That is squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squireselectric. You can also call if you like. Yeah, that's what you're into. It's 503-252-1609. I don't know if you call today, they may or may not answer. Probably not. But who knows? I think Joe Squires in there dumping some stuff from his house into the dumpster, because apparently they just bring everything from home and they just dump it right in the huge, huge dumpster, which he invited us to do as well. He's like, if you got things at your house to throw away, bring them here. So
that explains why it's a popular dumpster amongst the local hobos.
That's right, because they're always sort of cycling through, because it's not just your industrial refuse. It's things from Joe Squires' home as well.
Yeah.
You might find a Honus Wagner card in there. So you can contact Squires Electric at 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical and solar contractors and supervisors. This means they can come, they can install, they can upgrade, they can repair, they can augment, they can adjust, they can obfuscate, they can fort, spindle, fold, bend, staple, mutilate. Whatever it is that might need to be done in your home in terms of electricity. If you're going to be building a brand new house or going to be building some sort of an antechamber, or perhaps a chamber of secrets, they can get that taken care of for you. So you contact them at 503-252-1609. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. They are Squires Electric. Here's Dawn Taylor.
Endeavour and its crew of six left the International Space Station and headed home to close out NASA's next-to-last shuttle flight, pausing just long enough today to perform a victory lap and test equipment for a future interplanetary ship. Space Station resident Ronald Guerin Jr. said, "Endeavour looks real nice out there," as they left. The Space Station crew beamed down video of the departing shuttle, the last ever shot of Endeavour in orbit. It was a dark, solitary image against the blue, cloud-covered Earth and grew increasingly smaller. NASA's youngest shuttle, the baby of the fleet with just 25 space voyages, is due back in Florida early Wednesday. Its next stop will be that it will be in a museum in Los Angeles for what some consider to be an early retirement. Meanwhile, all of the future International Space Station astronauts will return to Earth in a Russian capsule. One crew did just that last week, including Katie Coleman. She says it's no space shuttle landing.
Just picturing a metallic can falling out of the sky, people screaming. It's so hot! I'm sorry, what?
This is Katie Coleman saying that she'd rather land on the space shuttle.
Yeah.
She told me that the landing was a bit hard coming down in Kazakhstan. The Russian spacecraft always come down and land on land. And as she got out, you know, she was waiting for her flight doctor to catch her as she's coming out of the capsule. And eventually she said, okay, and she just went ahead and jumped.
That's so great. I love... We're just having to hitch a ride with the Russians back to Earth. So
we don't land in the ocean. We just land somewhere in the middle of Kazakhstan.
Do you get the sense that they don't really know where it was going to come down either? Sort of a, well, this doesn't have your tracking devices that, you know, and so you just cut to like somewhere like in the backcountry of Zagreb where there's sort of a, just like right into a tree. Jesus.
Coleman says her 5-month mission in orbit was an indescribable experience.
It was like that book, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, where the kids enter this magical world. And when they come back, nobody understands that world is out there. But when they're in that world is very real. And that's a little bit what the space station was like for me.
Yeah, see, and I kind of get the thing where it's like, if they did offer like the you know, the commercial space flights, I like to think that I go, but I know that I wouldn't, because it seems like it's awesome, but I'm just a huge pussy, and I would just be terrified of the entire thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it.
I like to think that I would embrace that, but I know me, I wouldn't do it.
Up to 420 whale sharks gathered off the coast of the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico, forming the world's largest known assembly of this species, according to a press release issued by the Smithsonian National Zoological Park. The discovery counters the widely held belief that whale sharks, which can weigh more than 79,000 pounds, are solitary filter feeders that prefer to be alone in the open ocean. The impressive shark assembly proves they will gather for the right reasons. Food appears to be the draw.
There's a picture of this, by the way, at the same place, rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids for May 30th.
Yeah, I especially like that there is a boat there so that you can get
a sense of scale
that these sharks, which I'd like to once again reiterate, can weigh more than 79,000 pounds.
You know, our friend Todd Tulsis has gone swimming with this kind of shark.
The whale shark.
He and his wife, yeah, they've gone, there's a picture of him somewhere. And he said they're the size of a school bus.
Yeah. Mike Maslenska, a biologist at the Smithsonian's Conservation Biology Institute, said whale sharks are the largest species of fish in the world, yet they mostly feed on the smallest organisms in the ocean, such as zooplankton. He said that their research revealed in this case the hundreds of whale sharks had gathered to feed on dense patches of fish eggs. Their team identified the whale shark assembly using both surface and aerial surveys. Considering the sharks can grow to more than 40 feet long, the surface level surveying must have been extraordinary. In spite of their enormous size, whale sharks are not aggressive and move very slowly. Usually they're seen in the ocean with up to 5 feet wide mouths open, waiting for food to float in. The sharks occur in all tropical and subtropical ocean regions around the globe. And so as part of the study, the scientists used fine nets to collect food samples inside and around the school of feeding sharks to find out what it was had drawn them there. And they determined that there were a whole lot of tunny eggs. And the little tunny are a member of the mackerel family.
Yeah, this is the thing where they don't have to be, you know, even though there's filter feeders. I mean, they could filter you out of the ocean because they're the size of a house and you're tiny.
Yeah, you don't want to piss them off.
No, well, not even that. They wouldn't even know. I mean, they would just be, oh, here I am filtering. It'd be brine, dawn, brine. Like, they wouldn't even, you know, there'd be no way to tell.
That would be startling, though, if you weren't expecting that. And you look down, hey, look, a shark. Hey, look,
Oh, my God, I'm in the belly of a whale.
Yeah. Play equipment designed by so-called safety Nazis doesn't allow children to learn from risk-taking.
Who calls them safety Nazis?
I don't know. The person who wrote this calls them that.
Okay.
Super safe play equipment doesn't allow children to learn from risk-taking, according to an Australian expert. More kids aged 2 to 7 were getting injured in playgrounds because they didn't know how to take calculated risks. A speaker at the Early Childhood Education Conference in Melbourne, Australia this week said modern plastic fantastic playgrounds were too safe. Often playgrounds are designed by engineers who have no knowledge of children, said Prue Walsh. Children need to actively explore and discover the world around them, and to do that, they need to learn to take calculated risks. Playground injuries were often the result of children being poorly coordinated because they did not know how to negotiate risks, said Ms. Walsh. I worry about children who don't run up slippery slides, she said. Ms. Walsh said commercial pressures such as insurance premiums had influenced the design of today's playgrounds. Parents are scared of their precious children getting injured, and teachers are scared of getting sued, she said.
Well, now I don't even know what I think. Am I in favor of science or am I opposed to it? I'm so confused now.
She suggested longer and bigger slides built into embankments to eliminate falls, also smooth boulders for balancing, shallow ponds for exploring, and plenty of vegetation to provide nooks and crannies for children to crawl around.
Don't have kids. Don't care. By the way, speaking of Nazis, though, this really is one of the final insults that now somebody who's designing safer playground equipment is a Nazi.
Yeah.
I mean,
diluted the term.
It's lost some of the punch, I think, yes. Are we still in science?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
I have one more, in fact.
All right.
Crews recovered a 2,500-pound anchor that belonged to Blackbeard's flagship, Queen Anne's Revenge, from the Atlantic Ocean on Friday. The anchor has been on the ocean floor since 1718. The anchor was brought up to the decks of the RV Dan Moore and will be offloaded at the state port of Morehead City, North Carolina. The public is invited to see the anchor at 1:30 p.m. on Friday, which I guess you missed it already, at the Crystal Coast Visitor Center. After the viewing, the anchor is taken to the QAR Conservation Lab in East Carolina University in Greenville. Director Joseph Schwartzer said... Schwartzer said... The most comprehensive exhibit of Queen Anne's Revenge material to date will open at the North Carolina Maritime Museum on June 11th. The exhibit entails the complete renovation and redesign of over one-third of the museum's exhibit space. In June of 1718, Blackbeard ran the vessel aground after a successful blockade of the Charleston Harbor. The shipwreck was located in 1996, and the shipwreck site is listed on the National Register of Historic Sites.
Seems like he needed some anchor management, Don. Yeah.
That's all the science.
All right. We done with that? All right.
Oh, God, yes.
Science on the march. I didn't make the Moorhead observation, by the way, that I could have in there.
That's true, you didn't.
Brought to you by Squires Electric at 503-252-16. See, while everybody else is just sort of, I don't know. Well, I was going to say everybody else is doing reruns, but I'm thinking, but I guess not. I got Cascadia. I think most of the shows are live today.
I think so, yeah.
I'm thinking of, what do you call it? Terrestrial radio, where everybody's just a slack
right.
ass. And we're, let's be honest, and where you probably are getting the same program you would get tomorrow because It's not like they give the machine the day off, so I mean, you know.
No.
Not like the voice tracking module in Houston is really complaining about having to work today. So, yeah, so we are here live giving you brand new wit today. It's Squires Electric can be reached at 503-252-1609 or facebook.com/Squires Electric. They are the proud sponsors of Your Science on the March. Fantastic. Coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com, the Rick Emerson radio program for today for Memorial Day, May 30th. 2011. Today we got Mr. Aaron Duran going to be joining us for the Weekend Geek. Also, a recap of last night's episode of The Killing. That is coming up, plus more. Here's Don Taylor.
Germany's ruling coalition has agreed to shut down all of the nation's nuclear power plants by 2022. Minister of Ecology Norbert Röttgen of the Christian Democratic Union Party made the announcement early Monday after negotiations with coalition partner the Liberal Party, which had been opposed to setting a date for decommissioning the nuclear facilities. Opposition parties have long supported shuttering nuclear energy in Germany. Röttgen said, "The decision looks like this. 7 older nuclear power plants and the nuclear plant Krümmel will not go back online. The second group of 6 nuclear reactors will go offline at the end of 2021 at the latest, and the 3 most modern, newest nuclear plants will go offline at 2022 at the latest. To make up for the loss of nuclear energy, the German government will begin to switch to renewable energy and increase investments in energy research." A statement published last week said, "But we will not be able to do without conventional power plants, above all cutting-edge gas power plants, for a long time. New fruits of new research should contribute to making the energy transition more efficient and easier on the ecology." In March, German Chancellor Angela Merkel announced she would rethink a plan to extend the lifespan of her country's nuclear power plants. She said at a news conference that the events in Japan have shown us that even things that seem all but impossible scientifically can, in fact, happen.
You know, like waves.
Yeah.
And
earthquakes.
When you're next to the ocean.
Yeah.
Because nobody had anticipated that at all, ever, in any way. What do you mean the Earth is actually going to move around? That's crazy talk. Hothead.
Earthquakes and tsunamis in Japan? That's unheard of.
Radioactive problems in Japan? Sends up an email and says, OMG, you are working. Well, of course we're working. But see, if you come in this late, you're going to miss all the Nazi humor that we had early on. We're not going to repeat those jokes either. You have to go back and find them.
Genius. We're here for you. The news does not take the day off, sir.
No. I mean, what am I going to do? Sit at home, have a life? No. Here's Don Taylor.
I tried. He wouldn't let me.
Yeah.
The 65-year-old head...
Wait, you mean Patrick?
No, I mean you.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Is it so, Memorial Day, we're going to take the day off? You were like, no! Oh, well, okay.
Well, because, I mean, you know, the people.
Yeah. The 65-year-old head of a university in Columbia says he ate a few plant stems and drank urine to survive 4 days stranded in a Louisiana swamp. Francisco Piedrahita
may not be the actual pronunciation,
of Universidad Isesi in Cali, Columbia, was spotted on Wednesday from a sheriff's office helicopter in a clearing several hundred yards from the trail where he had gone on Saturday to photograph brightly colored male wood ducks. He left the end of Wood Duck Trail in search of a pond that he later learned had dried up, he said.
It turned out a slow, agonizing death lane.
Yes. The walk in the park looked like no risk at all, he said, but he was worried about losing his mobile phone, so he had left it in the safe at his hotel. He tried to make his way back to the trail, but soon found himself in a swamp. When it is this deep, it is no problem, he said, his hands about a foot apart. But when it is this deep, he said, his hands closer to 2 feet apart, it is difficult. For most of 4 days, Piedrahita said he followed the rule for lost people, stay in place. He said he spent most of the time on an island, a log and raised mud, about 3 meters long. He made a remarkably quick recovery for dehydration, exposure, muscle loss, some gastrointestinal and kidney problems, resulting from no water and
little
food.
He's on an island.
Well, he called it an island. It was a log and some raised mud.
Okay, but all right, fine.
But basically, he was stuck in a swamp.
But you can get water from mud. Even I know how to do that.
Well,
I mean, why do you got to go right to drink and pee? I mean, that it seems like it's you know. Couple of days and you're drinking your own business. That's somebody didn't pay enough attention. Of course, he left his cell phone. What'd you say, back in the safe at the hotel?
Yeah.
So the cell phone would survive under any circumstances. No matter what happens, the cell phone was going to make it through alive. All right. That's great.
He may have learned his lesson where that's concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a mobile phone, you see.
Right.
You could take it with you wherever.
Yeah.
All right.
President Obama has nominated General Martin Dempsey, the Army Chief of Staff, to be the next chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Obama said he has full confidence in Dempsey's abilities.
For nearly 40 years in uniform, Martin Dempsey is one of our nation's most respected and combat-tested generals.
The president made the announcement this morning.
The men and women of our armed forces are the best our nation has to offer, and they deserve nothing but the absolute best in return. And that includes leaders who will guide them and support their families with wisdom and strength and compassion.
Barack Obama's voice sounds lower here than it normally does.
With nearly 40 years in uniform.
Maybe he's got a little bit of a cold.
Martin Dempsey is one of our nation's most respected.
Is he putting on some fake high-pitched voice so that he doesn't frighten white people sometimes?
Maybe. Well, because he sounds, in the Memorial Day commencement, the Memorial Day speech stuff earlier, he sounded really deep, too. So maybe he has a little bit
of
a...
Oh, maybe it's an allergy thing.
An allergy thing, a little bit of a cold or something.
Okay. I thought maybe he was just debase himself, but you know what I mean, to remove the base from his voice so as not to unnerve, you know, my in-laws.
Maybe the real Obama took Memorial Day off, and this is the doppelganger.
Android Obama.
To just do the really boring speeches.
Pseudo-Obama.
Yeah.
All right. Did you ever hear that thing of the Michael Jackson trial where apparently Michael Jackson really has like a very, very deep bassy voice?
Yes, I did.
So terrifying. I would give, I mean, as much as it freaks me out, I'd give anything to hear that just once. Where they just like called the house and he answered like, who this? You know, and it was just sort of like,
damn it, Blake, pick up your toys.
Wrong number.
The Ohio bank robber, dubbed the Mullet Bandit by federal authorities, appears to have struck again. The latest heist took place last week at Key Bank on Stringtown Road in Grove City, Ohio. The FBI said a man matching the physical description of the mullet-wearing suspect sought in two previous holdups walked into the bank and handed the teller a note saying he was robbing the bank, that he had a gun and would hurt the teller if she didn't cooperate. The robber was dressed in the Mullet Bandit's garb, including a Seattle Mariners baseball cap and large dark sunglasses. Initial surveillance photos suggested he had shed his distinctive hairdo to evade detection, swapping out his mullet for something more up-to-date. But subsequent images revealed he had merely tucked his mullet up underneath the baseball cap.
Aha, uh-huh. Yes. Savvy maneuver from 1989.
Harry Trombetas, the FBI agent tracking
Harry
him.
Harry
Trombetas.
Is that a thing you get after you're like in the Amazon at the wrong time of the year?
Yes. Yes, of his scheme to tuck his hair up under his hat, the FBI agent tracking him, Harry Trombetas, said, tricky guy.
Yeah, but with the putting it under the hat and all.
The suspect is described as a white male in his late 30s, about 6 feet tall, with a medium build, a scruffy appearance, and dark hair cut in a mullet.
Seamus wants you to know that he shaves his Trombetas.
Oh.
Harry Trombetas.
Oh.
That's great. That sounds like a thing that Bill Curtis or like who's the guy? Edward Herrmann would say when he's narrating something on the history. Little did Lewis and Clark know that the guide had come down with Harry Trombetas and would be dead by morning. That's wonderful. That's fantastic. The mullet, and by the way, just a description of him like a mullet and a Seattle Mariners hat. Which is just like double the loser, double your fun. And then sunglasses. That could be like any number of guys in my neighborhood, by the way.
Yeah, except he's in Ohio. So you think wearing a Seattle Mariners hat in Ohio is going to like maybe get you a little bit of attention. I mean,
seriously.
You know.
Yeah, all right.
How many guys could there possibly be in the middle of Ohio? It's not the mullet. It's the Seattle Mariners
hat.
Yeah,
really. Even people in Seattle don't really want to wear Seattle the Mariners stuff. So.
A 16-year-old girl in Taiwan had more than 30 ants in her ears because of her tendency towards snacking in bed.
Ugh.
Recently, her ears started itching, and when her family members said they had seen ants climbing out of her ears, she rushed to see a doctor. The doctor found there were about 6 ants in the girl's left ear and more than 20 in her right ear.
How old was she?
16.
Okay.
Fortunately, the ants had not caused any harm to the girl's eardrum.
Not yet.
The girl said she likes eating snacks and cleaning her ears while lying in bed.
I was going to say, she likes snacks that she stores inside her ears like a squirrel storing nuts in Central Park?
She must eat laying down and the crumbs drop in her ears or something.
Are her ears like Mr. Twit's beard where she just stores little bits of egg in there for later on in the day?
Maybe.
Jesus.
Ants in her ears.
I mean, anybody who's seen Night Gallery knows that this is just the first half of the story, though. The rest comes later. Yeah, my mom had the whole thing. My mom used to, when my mom was growing up, she lived in Molalla. How much Lala?
Molalla.
That's right. When she was growing up, she used to work on the hop, in the hop fields out there. And so she would stop for, lunch every now and again. But at one point, when she was a child, she did not know that you shouldn't, even if it's wrapped, you shouldn't just be keeping your sandwich on the ground before lunch. Like, she would just come and she would set her coat and her sandwich and whatever.
And her bindle.
And then they have these huge, like, wickery hot baskets that's occurring. Anyway, so but then she went back and she was like, well, lunchtime, guess I'll be eating. And, of course, unbeknownst to her, the sandwich had just been filled with red ants. Yeah. That's not fire ants, but still. I mean, you know, they're not good. That's no good. You don't want that.
No. I don't want to hear about that at all.
Seamus is noting that she basically has one of those, like, you know, one of those Uncle Wilbur ant farms in her head probably now. So. Well, yeah.
Illinois motorcycle riders and bicyclists will be able to go straight on a red light after coming to a complete stop under a measure sent to Governor Pat Quinn on Sunday. The proposal, approved on a 101-11 vote, is designed to address sometimes lengthy waits faced by bikers when they approach stoplights that change based on sensors on the roadway. Motorcycle rights groups say riders sometimes get stuck at a light for several cycles because the lighter weight of the two-wheeled vehicles won't trigger the sensors.
All right, so is that the deal? Is it? It's not the sensors under the pavement?
Yeah.
Well, how does that even work? Pavement doesn't bend.
No, but it can still feel pressure on it. They're pressure plates.
Is there an actual plate?
Yeah, it's a metal pressure plate, and it's under the tarmac.
All right, but okay. I don't understand, though. If there's a metal plate under the asphalt,
right,
and the asphalt is, like, you know, rock and doesn't bend, how is it that the plate is being depressed?
Well, the asphalt does bend.
If I put, like, your Nintendo Wii, like, under some cement and had you jump on it, it's not like it would work.
Well, part of the reason that we line our streets with asphalt instead of concrete is because it does give. It does bend. It contracts and it bends and it doesn't crack the way the concrete does.
Well, all right. I always figured that there was just something on that there was, like, a sensor on top of the stoplight that sensed that, like, you were there, like a motion sensor.
No, that's why sometimes if you're leaving a place and if somebody doesn't get into the actual turn lane,
right,
they're like half in the turn lane and half not.
It just never changes.
The light will never change.
All right.
So if a stoplight fails to turn green within a reasonable amount of time, the legislation would allow a biker to proceed through the intersection after making sure the intersection is clear. Chicago would be exempted from the proposed law.
Okay.
You'll be able to do it everywhere in Illinois
except for Chicago. That's like, it's like a bizarro law then. But by the way, here's just a funny thing. This messenger says, I've been listening all morning while canning preserves.
That's nice.
All right.
But that's the entire statement?
That's the entire thing.
No. And it's helping, or it's...
I don't know.
Speaking of you, I'm sending you some.
Probably not. Hey, you know what I found?
You should send us some.
And by I mean and my wife. You know, she found in the back of the cupboard. You know, it's like finding $10 in a coat and you forgot it was there. You know, found in the back of the cupboard, some canned smoked, or some you know, like a preserved smoked salmon that my mother had made.
Oh.
My mother smoked some salmon and then canned it, you know, like in a, you know, but like in a mason jar,
yeah,
or whatever. And then we had two jars of that. And I totally forgot that they were there. That and some of my mother's homemade applesauce.
Wow.
And I know we say canning, but it's in a jar. But you know what,
yeah,
I mean? It's been sealed up. It's been there since winter. And so now I'm going to... that was a thing just discovered last night, which is awesome. They are like one of those, like, automatic doors, like if you're walking into a store or something.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Just checking.
Let's do our entertainment news.
All right. Here's your entertainment news. For Monday.
Jeff Conaway, who starred in the sitcom Taxi, died on Friday. He was 60. He was taken off life support on Thursday and died Friday morning at Encino Tarzana Medical Center. His manager, Catherine Boole, said, "It's sad that people remember his struggle with drugs. He's touched so many people. He was always so interesting to talk to. We respected him as an artist and loved him as a friend." She said, "He was trying so hard to get clean and sober. If it hadn't been for his back pain, I think he would have been able to do it."
Okay.
Not buying that. Also dead, Gil Scott-Heron, the spoken word artist, considered one of rap music's most important progenitors, died Friday at the age of 62.
He's the Revolution Will Not Be Televised?
Yes.
Guy?
Yeah. Yes. He grew up in Tennessee and the Bronx, attending Lincoln University in Pennsylvania before spending much of his later life in the New York neighborhood of Harlem. combination of his biting political musings and gritty social commentary over the production of jazz powerhouse Bob Thiel. His first album opened with what would become a deep voice is the deep-voiced intellectual's best-known composition, a pop referencing mass media critique called "The Revolution Will Not Be Televised." He went on to make 12 other albums, but it was that song that influenced wordsmiths for the next several decades and earned him a title that he didn't really, you know, embrace himself, the Godfather of Rap. Rapper Chuck D told The New Yorker in an extensive profile of the artist, "You can go into Ginsberg and the Beat Poets and Dylan, but Gil Scott-Heron is the manifestation of the modern world. He and the Last Poets set the stage for everyone else. In what way necessary? Well, if you try to make pancakes and you ain't got the water or the milk or the eggs, you're trying to do something you can't."
The best part is that Chuck D said this and he, like, bellowed it while jabbing you angrily in the chest with a finger. And then, like, hit you in the shoulder and said, "You want to make something of it? Hey, by the way, we're trying again to get Flavor Flav on the Rick Emerson Show."
Are we? Oh, good.
Yeah.
Can we ask him what happened with that whole chicken restaurant thing?
Be sure to do that. I'll let you ask that. You can lead with that. They didn't come together last time. We're trying again, though.
By the way, I went to the convenience store this morning, and I saw my favorite convenience store has a big poster for Blast in the window now.
Is that the Colt 45 stuff?
The Snoop Dogg Colt 45 stuff. And it actually is like an old Colt 45 ad.
Yeah.
It's got Snoop Dogg looking all blinged out and some sexy lady thing, and it actually has the tag on it. It says, "Works every time."
Yeah.
Just like Billy Dee Williams
Excellent.
Used to say.
I wonder if Billy Dee Williams is at home on the sofa just being angry, though. Just sitting there at home, and sitting at home, and in his chair, just like looking at seeing the print ad, and just being really annoyed by it. Are they using Billy Dee Williams at all? Because he was,
I don't think so.
Like last year, even he was on some Colt 45 that Sarah and Greg had in the fridge. I don't know if it was like a throwback, if it was like a promotional thing where they were just turning out like an old school version of the can or whatever. That's awesome. I haven't seen those. I'll have to go for it. Was it at a 7-Eleven?
It was at the 7 Days Market up the street.
Up the street from here where they did part of that Red Fang video. Yeah. Excellent.
Justin Timberlake's William Rast clothing line sponsored sports car took a first place spot in the Indy 500 thanks to driver Dan Weldon. Timberlake wrote on his Twitter page,
"I am the world's most perfect man.
What a Memorial Day weekend. The William Rast car just won the Indy 500. 5 exclamation points. Congrats to Dan Weldon, the WR Racing team, and everyone else who put in the hard work for this victory. Unreal. This is the second Indy 500 win for Weldon, who beat out 32 other racers to take home the Borg Warner Trophy and some serious bragging rights.
Why do I even try? Seriously, why do I even put forth the effort to work on this? Justin Timberlake, with a wave of his perfectly manicured hand, conquers yet another industry in another field. All right.
It must just be great to be him.
It really is. I would imagine he gets up every day and just kisses the ground and just,
another day being me.
Seriously, it spends about 5 or 6 minutes afraid that he's going to wake up and be late for school, he'll really be like, Or he'll wake up and be like a guy working with actuarial tables. But then he goes, "No, I'm still Justin Timberlake." Awesome.
Hip-hop singer Sean Kingston has been stabilized and moved to the intensive care unit at a hospital after crashing his watercraft into a Miami Beach bridge, his publicist said. The publicist, Joseph Carroza, said, "Kingston's family is grateful for everyone's prayers and support." Kingston and a female passenger were injured when the watercraft hit the Palm Island Bridge around 6 p.m. Sunday. The Miami Herald reports that a passing boater saw the accident and took the two on board his vessel. Both were hospitalized early today at Ryder Trauma Center, but they didn't know their condition. The authorities are investigating the crash, and nothing at this point would indicate that alcohol played a role. Kingston rose to fame with his 2007 hit Beautiful Girls and was also featured on songs by artists including Justin Bieber. On Twitter, Bieber posted a message of support for Kingston. He tweeted early today, "Got my friend Sean Kingston in my prayers tonight. A true friend and big bro. Please keep him in your prayers tonight as well."
You don't want Justin Bieber praying for you.
No.
That doesn't help anything. That is where God is less likely to intercede if the only person really demanding prayer on your behalf is Justin Bieber.
I saw something the other day that apparently Justin Bieber was walking around wearing like a $20,000 Hello Kitty necklace.
Really?
Yeah. It was like a big old Hello Kitty thing made out of diamonds and stuff. And
what is up with that guy?
I don't know.
I mean, I'm not...
Well, he's got awful rich, and everyone's telling him that he can have everything he wants, and he's only like 17 years old.
I have no problem with there being a $20,000 Hello Kitty thing, but it's... I don't really know any guys at all, period, that can really pull off a Hello Kitty. Was it like a Hello Kitty, like a...
It was Hello Kitty's head. It was a huge Hello Kitty
head. Was it like a Flavor Flav clock, but it was like a Hello Kitty head?
Yeah, except not quite that big, but yeah, probably about 5 inches across. A giant Hello Kitty head.
Do you know anybody, male or female, that could really pull that off very easily? But I mean, especially, like, do you know any man at all?
No.
I mean, I'm just...
No.
I know people with a lot of different kinds of style, and I don't really see that working. That seems like a thing. That seems like a thing that a gullible Justin Bieber bought because a salesperson told him that everybody was going to be wearing them next year. But this was his chance to be ahead of the curve.
It's just countdown to Lohanville for him. It really is.
Yeah, but what if it's not? What if it's like countdown to Timberlakeville? And like
that I would applaud that if it was true. I would absolutely applaud that if that's what happened.
Yeah, but that means that we have to take one step back in line. Like another step back in line.
I'm not even in that line. I realize I'm in a completely different line.
You are in the slow line at motor vehicles.
Yeah, I'm in the line to pick up my tires at Costco. Excellent. I'm not in the same line.
Excellent. Are these hot dog samples free?
That's all the entertainment.
All right, there's your entertainment news. For Monday, May 30th, 2011, that is Memorial Day. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Radio program next hour at the rickemersonshow.com. Today we'll talk to Mr. Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek. We'll also have a recap of last night's episode of The Killing, which was exceptional. And then do we have... exceptional. And then do we have watches of some kind?
Oh, we do. We have a religious nutcase watch. We have a penis watch. We might have something else. I'm not sure. I just have a huge stack of things here, but I know for a fact we have a penis watch and a religious nutcase watch.
Excellent. That is all coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com, where you, yes, you, can be amused for the low cost of just 32 cents a day. And by you, I mean brand new subscriber Jeremy, who's held close to the Rick Emerson Show bosom as today. So Jeremy joining us now. And again, your first week is free. And at the end of the first week, if you decide that we suck, which is not like out of the question, you can just opt out. But, that won't happen because you'll forget. So, which is really kind of what we bank on. So that's 32 cents a day for your entertainment. That's like 10 cents an hour, you know? So, I mean, really, you know, and it's...
Look at us here working on what could have been our day off. And we're not. We're here for you.
And, but, you know, and if you can't find, 10 cents an hour, it seems like you could probably pick that. You could probably pick up more than that, in the gutter in front of your house, you know, or steal it from a small child. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm really, you know, I'm just saying.
Under the couch cushions.
Exactly. So that's, or somebody else's couch cushions. We don't care.
Yeah.
Spends the same either way on this end. So that's it. Rick Emerson Show. .com. All right, we got like 90 seconds here, so we got like two more or something like that.
Yeah, I just want to say just really quick, we have a listener named Mark who is British.
This is going to be a thing where he's got cancer or something, is it?
No, this is
just... You got that tone in your voice.
No, it's really just about the fact that he's British. And he posted this thing on Facebook. It's a picture of, I guess it's his dog. And I'm going to read... This is what he wrote on Facebook. My name is Diddle Diggsy, and I just got my first ever double Q today. So ruddy proud. It's like he's not even actually speaking English.
No, he's making things up. That's not even...
He's just making up fake British stuff just to sound more British.
Because he knows you don't know. That's the thing. Yeah, he's just screwing with you.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. That's not real British talk.
No.
We now have about 40 seconds.
Okay, I'll read this really fast. Police in Florida said they arrested a man who allegedly dumped water from a swimming noodle onto a woman on the beach and then punched her in the face.
A swimming noodle?
Yeah, those long foam things that kids play with. They're called swimming noodles.
Okay.
Naples police said the victim was at Loudermilk Park Beach with a friend Thursday, came across a rotting watermelon carved into the shape of a face, which he placed in the water. The man, whose name was Carl Ludwig Eichner, 68, retrieved the watermelon and placed it back on the beach. The woman came across the rotting watermelon a second time, put it back in the water. Then he used a swimming noodle filled with water to dump water on the woman and punched her in the face.
None of this. Okay, now you're just making up things to screw with Mark the Brit. All right. On that note, we'll... Excellent. So there you go. There's your Memorial Day installment of Legion of News. Wasn't that fantastic? You can find out. You can find this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here, or at legionofnews.com. You can also take it with you on your mobile device if you'd like as well. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemersonshow.com. Coming your way after a brief musical interlude today, featuring more selections from the Book of Mormon, among other things. That's all on the way. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milk Packing District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, Reverend Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, we thank you for listening. We'll see you again tomorrow, Tuesday, noon, for another installment of Legion of News. Have a safe and satisfying Monday, won't you?